The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 17, Return to the Field.
Thomas, oh, hi Thomas, have you got a moment?
Grace poked her head out of the door from her office. Thomas, who had been on his way to the canteen, shrugged nervously and followed Grace into her room. The small office was crammed with cardboard boxes stacked to the ceiling, which appeared to contain all her notes and work, as if she were packing ready to move. Odd piles of papers were strewn on the floor and table, giving a general feeling of chaos to the whole place. In the middle of all this, sat at her desk, were two men. One was short and greying, in his late 40s, and wearing a shabby corduroy jacket, and the other, a younger man, was probably in his early 30s, with fine, sandy hair and small features. They nodded to Thomas as he entered the room, as if already familiar, but Thomas didn't recognise them. Grace shifted a pile of papers from a low filing cabinet, dumping them on the floor as she walked around the desk to her chair.
"Please, have a seat, Tom," she said lightly, beckoning him in and pointing to the filing cabinet.
He perched himself unsteadily on the cold and comfortable metal, looking around at the chaos of her room.
"Oh, don't worry about the mess," she said matter-of-factly. "I'll explain later. Anyway, I just wanted to introduce you all," she began, offering a cigarette to the younger man, who took one with a grin.
"You haven't quit yet," he smiled sarcastically. Grace rolled her eyes and laughed.
"Thomas, this is Dr. Gary Starling, Assistant Director of Field Studies here, and Stuart Nix, who..."
She paused a moment, glancing at the younger man with a smile.
"Just what is it you do here, Stuart? Officially, that is."
The man had a light, musical laugh and smiled back good-naturedly at Grace.
"Although it's high time I had a promotion," he smiled, "I believe I'm still only a leading field technician."
"Shame on you," teased Grace. "I thought you'd be a general or something by now."
"Yes, well, there you have it. This is Thomas Sullivan, our resident genius, who you'll be working closely with."
Thomas turned a bright shade of crimson and stared at the floor.
"It's a pleasure to meet you," said Starling with a smile, leaning over and shaking Thomas's hand.
"Hi," grinned Nix with a wave.
Thomas mumbled an awkward reply.
"Now, Gary and Stuart are returning to us after a leave of absence, and they'll be wanting to do a little catching up, so I'll be scheduling a series of meetings. I thought you could sit in on them, Thomas. I think they'd be interested to hear what you have to say."
"We've heard a lot about you already," said Starling. "Grace won't shut up about you, in fact." He laughed.
"Yes, yes, all right," grinned Palmer, catching Thomas's look of embarrassment. "Anyway, Thomas, I thought you might be interested in what these two can tell you about the field. They can teach you a lot of things you'll need to know for when you go in. I don't think anybody knows more."
Thomas looked at her in shock.
"Me? Go into the field?" he stuttered.
"Sure, if you want to. Why not?" replied Grace, confused that somebody might pass up the opportunity.
"It'll be quite a while before we can get back on track, but with Gary and Stuart's experience, I'm sure we'll be running regular trips in again. You deserve to go in as much as anybody."
"Are you the two from the accident?" asked Thomas, suddenly realising he recognised their names from the countless reports he had read.
Grace winced at his outburst, and a sudden flash of alarm passed over the two men's faces.
"That's right, Thomas. This is their first day back at work, so we'll maybe not linger on that too long."
"It's okay, Grace," said Starling, his composure regained.
"Yes, Thomas, we're the ones from the accident, and Stuart here isn't supposed to be out of hospital for another 2 weeks."
He raised one eyebrow at Grace and Nix. They both shrugged innocently and smiled.
"But I hear, Thomas, you had some adventures of your own."
"Oh, that thing with the woman last month," said Grace matter-of-factly. "Yes, I'll show you the suit later. Three of them just appeared in the concourse. I think the gear will be right up your street, though," she said, her voice filling with excitement. "You're not going to believe some of the technology involved. We're still in the process of taking it all apart and analysing it. There's so much. But already some of the things we've learned are going into production. We've set up our own facilities for research and development. I'll give you a tour of the workshops later."
A stream of babble finally ran dry, and the room was left in an awkward silence. Starling and Nix fidgeted anxiously in their seats.
"So, have you got a date for the next full trip into the field?" asked Starling at last, his dread thinly disguised.
Grace looked intently at him for a second.
"Not yet," she sighed at last.
The next couple of weeks, probably. We're going to try a couple of dry runs and testers first. Don't worry, Gary, we won't rush into it.
She fiddled awkwardly with some papers on her desk.
I want to go on the first trip, said Starling in a low voice of lead.
Nix, Grace and Sullivan looked up at him in surprise and disbelief.
No, Gary, it's... began Grace.
If there's any danger still there, he continued, almost unwillingly.
Then I think, since I've been through it already, it makes sense. I know how to deal with it.
He shrugged his shoulders and gave a nervous, apologetic laugh.
You don't have to do this, you know, said Grace slowly, a tender expression on her face.
I know, I just think I could be of use, and I don't want anything to go wrong.
We'll talk later, said Grace softly. Later on.
A key rattled in the lock of the heavy iron door, and Alex looked up dejectedly as it swung inwards with a squeal. The guard stood anxiously to one side, his hand on the holster of his pistol, but Alex didn't move from where he lay on the cold bed. From behind the guard, Alex heard a low voice muttering, and the soldier stepped back to reveal the tall frame of Dr. Henschel. The old man strode into the room, informing the guard that he need not stay, and could leave them alone. The metal door swung closed once more. Henschel stood regarding Alex in silence. He seemed to have grown since Alex had last seen him, and there was a fire in the old man's eyes.
May I sit, Alexei?
He asked, pointing to the rough chair. Alex grunted his acquiescence, remaining unmoved upon the bed as Henschel slowly seated himself.
So, how are you keeping, Alexei?
Began Henschel at last. Alex didn't bother to reply. The old man gazed about the cell, his eyes darting from one place to the other as if viewing objects unseen. It was a trait which was becoming more and more common to him.
I must apologize for not visiting in such a long time, but I've been remarkably busy.
He gave a broad grin.
We are ready, Alexei. Our army is finally ready to rid the world of the threat from our enemies.
You're mad, muttered Alex morosely.
You've all gone stark raving mad.
Dr. Henschel seemed unaffected by his words.
Mad? For attempting to save life itself. There was a time when you were a willing member of our noble cause.
Alex just laughed grimly.
You're starting a war to preserve life. You don't have to try and justify your madness to me, Henschel.
He spat bitterly.
Oh, Alexei, you're so confused, aren't you? And well, you should be. You're under their influence, and you cannot see the whole picture. I will attempt to show you the truth, and perhaps in time we can salvage some of the good in you.
You're talking nonsense again. Your ravings make no sense, muttered Alex.
I will visit you again as time permits, Alexei, and you may learn our way once more, but forgive me, time is pressing and I must leave you again. I have instructed the guards to allow you books and such things as will occupy your mind. I'm sorry it has come to this, my old friend.
And with that, Henschel stood and knocked gently upon the door. It swung inwards and soon Alex was left alone once more. Over the next few weeks, Henschel would visit Alex many more times, speaking to him in the same strange way. At first Alex wouldn't listen, and would repeat his belief in Henschel's madness. But as time passed, alone in his cell, he started to fixate upon the old man's words. There was something about his voice which seemed to gain in power as the days wore on. Alex couldn't tell whether his captivity was weakening him, or if the old man was growing in stature. Henschel would sit at the table, his posture stern and erect, whilst Alex would slump sadly on the side of his iron-framed bed, slowly giving in to the old man's words. Thomas looked forlornly through the glass doors towards the library reception. Miss Castle sat rigidly at her desk, a steely gaze surveying the reading area.
No sign? Asked Sanders from behind him.
No, it must be her day off, mumbled Thomas sadly.
We really have to be going now, Thomas.
I'm sorry,
said Sanders, leading him back down the corridor. Thomas followed in a daze. He hadn't seen Susan since the day they had gone to Maundsworth House, almost 3 weeks ago now. He had tried to contact her at the library, but Miss Castle had told him she was away on leave. After that, his work had kept him so busy,
He had only been able to call past the library on a couple of occasions. Each time he had been met by the implacable Miss Castle, who impatiently told him Susan was unavailable. He wondered sadly if she were avoiding him. Thomas looked up from his thoughts and found himself outside a large security station. Sanders motioned to him, and after having his ID badge scanned, he was allowed through.
"Why are we going to the generator rooms?" asked Thomas, studying the warning signs on the walls as they passed.
Sanders gave a half smile but said nothing. They descended a broad, dimly lit flight of steps, then out through a set of winding tunnels with curving walls. Eventually the corridors came to an end and opened out. Thomas gasped in amazement. He was standing on a broad platform, alongside which an electric train was waiting. Sanders led him into a carriage, and Thomas found himself surrounded by workers from the labs, some of whom he recognised as team leaders. All of them seemed to carry the same perplexed expression as Thomas. He caught a snatch of whispered conversation between two white-coated lab personnel.
"The guy had a gun, for Christ's sakes. Said if I divulged any confidential information, he'd shoot me himself." "I never agreed to anything like this," said one.
"It's just macho military stuff," said the other. "They just want to frighten you."
"Well, he succeeded, I can tell you."
"You'll think twice before telling any secrets, though, won't you?"
"I'm thinking twice about getting another job. I never thought I'd be joining the bloody army."
"Well, with the current climate like it is, a military bunker might be the safest place to be."
"It'll all blow over, it's just politics. They're meant to be on our side, aren't they?"
"America's on its own side. And I don't know, it seems to be getting pretty ugly, don't you think?"
"I don't know, I try not to read the papers. Probably the best way."
The train set off with a jolt, heading off down the dark tunnels. Spears licked his dry lips nervously. He'd spent the last hour listening to reports of the current political tensions with Britain. They, the Americans, were stepping up diplomatic pressure for the return of the codes for their spy software, and were protesting about the discovery of the British secret weapons facility at Molesworth Military Base, so far to no avail.
"Let me make this clear, Spears," continued a member of the conference group. "Were it not for the threat we now face, then I for one would be happy to see you in prison."
"But sir," he simpered, "we discussed this. The tragic aircraft accident was..."
"How is the progress of our army units?" interrupted another of the anonymous, suited men, ignoring Spears with undisguised contempt.
"The first array is nearing completion, sir, and the primary stage of equipment production is underway. Our development is still hampered by our lack of intelligence from our operative at..."
"I don't want to hear about your lack of intelligence," retorted the man with a sneer.
"Just get those units up and running immediately."
"Yes, sir."
"Has there been any change in the situation, sir?"
he asked tentatively. The room fell into an uneasy silence.
"There's been another threat," mumbled the grey-suited man. "They left a message in the goddamn White House."
He banged his fist down on the table in frustration.
"The White House?" echoed Spears in disbelief. He could barely suppress a smirk. This would get them to pull their heads out of the sand, he thought.
"Same threats, same conditions. Either we cease all work in the field or they start targeting heads of state," sighed another man nervously.
"Now we want that array up and running, and we want you to track down these damn terrorists."
"But sir," muttered Spears, "as I've said before, there's only the British in the world with this technology."
"I will not believe that this is some elaborate double bluff by the fucking Brits," exploded the conference chairman. "Posing as terrorists, feeding as counterintelligence, it's nonsense, fantasy. The only reason you don't know of anybody else with this technology is because you haven't found them yet."
"Now we've got every man at our disposal searching for those damn terrorists, but it seems to me that our best hope is within the field. So find them and neutralize them, Spears. Maybe we can start patching things up with the Brits before it gets any uglier."
"See to it."
"Yes, sir,"
he croaked, getting up from the conference table and leaving the hall. Thomas was led off the train and onto a busy platform, almost identical to the one they had left. They had only journeyed for a minute or two, but Thomas still didn't have any idea where he was heading.
"I think Commander James wants to brief you about that," was all that Sanders would say.
Through the throng of personnel alighting from the train, Thomas spied Grace Palmer. She was shouting instructions to a group of workmen who were unloading piles of office equipment from the carriages and onto the platform. People milled all about them, most with a perplexed or lost look on their faces. Nobody seemed to have any clear idea as to where they were going. He spied Jane Honeyman, deputy head of control systems under Jim Grayson, appear at the top of one of the many flights of steps.
"All of the systems R&D to me, please," she called over the chaos. "Anybody who hasn't got an inventory list, please could you pick one up from my office, which is that way. You still need an inventory list."
Thomas was swept along with the crowd towards Grace, who was arguing with one of the workmen. He heard Jane's weary voice, full of frustration.
"No, you should have been on the next train. Well, I'm sorry, Doug will be meeting you. I don't know, about half an hour. I'm sorry, no, I need your inventory list."
"Hello, Dr. Grace," stuttered Thomas quietly, as he drew up beside her. She didn't appear to hear him, but went on arguing with the nearest workman.
"You're not moving bloody bricks here," she snapped at the worried-looking man. "Just treat those things with some respect. If I did my job as sloppily as you do yours, I'd end up blowing this whole place up, and I don't think anyone would miss you lot."
"But it was ripped already," protested the man weakly, looking down at Grace's battered old leather armchair. Up until recently, it had inhabited a dusty corner of Grace's office. Now it found itself pride of place in the middle of the platform.
"Bollocks!"
she exploded indignantly, then spotted Thomas hovering nervously beside her.
"Oh, hello, Tom," she said, instantly brightening up. "I expect you're wondering where you're off to now, don't you?"
She turned and led him along the platform, the workman temporarily forgotten.
"How are you doing, Jonah?"
she called back to Sanders, as she pushed her way through the throng. He shrugged and smiled back.
"So, where are we?" asked Thomas, darting between the crowds, trying to keep up with Grace's frantic pace.
"Oh, I think our glorious leader wants to tell you himself. He's round about somewhere, bloody drama queen," she muttered.
Thomas heard Sanders choke as he stifled his laughter, but Thomas didn't know who she was talking about.
"Do you know what the Americans are doing?" asked Thomas.
"I just heard some talking, people saying..."
They had left the crowd now, and had been walking in silence down brightly lit corridors for a few minutes.
"What? Don't you read the news? Have you been living under a stone for the past few weeks?"
She laughed heartily to herself. It was a warm and infectious sound.
"Oh, we caught the Yanks doing some industrial espionage somewhere or other. Some computer company in Manchester, I think. Anyway, the Yanks, believe it or not, went ballistic. They demanded all the gear, software and stuff, I presume, that the CIA used to hack the systems be returned to them or else. They say it's secret. The cheek of it. It's like a burglar trying to claim back his swag bag or something."
"So what did we say?" asked Thomas.
"We told them to bugger off," laughed Grace. "And rightly so. They shouldn't have been spying on us. But they're making a lot of hot air noises about it, though I wouldn't worry. It'll all blow over in a week."
Thomas wandered along aimlessly behind Sanders, who strode quietly through the anonymous corridors. It was exactly 2 weeks since the move to the Maundsworth House Centre, and this was the first time he had returned to the Array Labs. Today was to be a momentous occasion for him, and he had been lost in his troubled thoughts. Now, as he looked up, he couldn't work out where he was. Everywhere looked the same on the base. He bumbled along, searching for any points of reference. They approached a corridor, branching off from the main route, a security station halfway along. He had been consumed with his worries about his first trip into the field. There was only just over half an hour before he had to get suited up, and he was having second thoughts now that Sanders was leading him down towards the suit rooms and the accelerator array. He peered at the security station, trying to work out where he was, just as a figure walked past the end of the corridor beyond the wire fence.
"Susan!"
he cried out. His shout was an excited, high-pitched shriek, and without thinking he ran up the corridor to the gates. To Thomas's utter joy, Susan popped her head around the corner, her face lighting up as she recognised him. She hurried up to the wire fence, but a security guard prevented her from reaching it. Thomas looked up at the guard on his side of the gate, who waited patiently for his ID, and he quickly produced his badge from his pocket.
Susan, he called through the wire, I thought you'd gone, maybe. I tried to get to see you at the library a few times, he stuttered.
Susan laughed in her carefree tone. The sound was musical to Thomas's ears. I missed you, she smiled over the shoulder of the security guard who blocked her way. They made me take some leave, and then I'd heard they'd moved you over to the new labs. The guard dealing with Thomas returned his card to him and walked towards the gate, taking out his keys. Thomas, came a voice from behind him. Sanders held up a hand to the guard, who stopped and stepped back from the gate. I'm sorry, Thomas, you don't have clearance for this gate, he said, glancing through the fence towards Susan. We need to get to the suit rooms right now or we'll miss the deadline. I'm sorry, Thomas. He took hold of Thomas's shoulder in a gentle but firm grip. But, he protested weakly, I'm going into the field today, he called to Susan, as Sanders steered him away from the gate. You could come and see me off, if you wanted. He looked back at her as he stumbled unwillingly down the corridor. She peeped out from behind the guard. Oh, but I don't have clearance, she murmured sadly, but he had already disappeared around the corner. Thomas stood in the chamber, his eyes tightly shut and his heart pounding. Don't worry, Thomas. There's nothing to be afraid of, whispered Grace in a gentle voice. The reassuring mass of Sanders stood opposite, his expression hidden by the face mask beneath his visor. Around him were the ominous figures of the rest of the security team, their dark, armoured suits contrasting with Thomas's grey and orange gear. What does it feel like when... But Thomas didn't have a chance to finish his sentence. His body was suddenly weightless, and he felt himself begin to panic. He couldn't work out how to make his body breathe. He desperately tried to move his hands to his helmet, but he was paralyzed, unable to cry out. With all his effort, he wrenched his eyes open. He stumbled to the ground with a shriek, and to his surprise, he found himself staring at cracked red rock. Thomas, are you all right? He heard Grace yell. I'm fine, I think, he whispered half to himself. His attention was consumed with a small white flower nestled in a crack of the rock, close to where he had fallen. He found himself mesmerized by its beauty, and as he watched, the flower seemed to grow and unfold, sending out new slender shoots of subtle hues. Thomas! He was lifted bodily to his feet. Come on, we must be out of the doorway before the next team arrives. Thomas looked down as Sanders led him out of the circle of stones, but he couldn't see any sign of the flower. Well, what do you think? Asked Grace at his side. Thomas looked around him. He wished he could have seen the field as Grace must have first viewed it, but he was still humbled by its beauty. He was stood on a flat outcrop of red rock. Deep orange veins ran through it, which almost seemed to glow in the strange light. The rock ran down to a wide plain, which dipped to form a long, gentle valley. On and on it ran, smooth and featureless, eventually ending in distant mountains. Thomas grinned at the perfection of it. The sky was hazy and a strong grey-blue, the sun casting hard, crisp shadows. All this was lush grass, said Grace sadly, pointing out over the plains. It's still beautiful, stuttered Thomas in awe. Grace smiled at him. Yes, it's still beautiful. Mind your backs, coming through, came a jovial voice from behind them. Thomas glanced around and jumped aside as Stuart Nix approached them, a huge canister held in front of him in the sample claws. He reminded Thomas of an ant carrying an impossibly large burden. The second team had appeared behind them and were dispersing from the doorway. Another figure wearing a sample claw suit followed closely behind Nix, carrying a similar load. There was now a semicircle of 12 soldiers gathered around them. Thomas noticed a small figure pushing his way between them and realized it was Gary Starling. Yes, excuse me, if you don't mind, thank you, he muttered in frustration. Jesus Christ, is all this necessary? He nodded half-heartedly back to the line of soldiers. Can't we at least pretend to be scientists? You hear that, Dave? Laughed Grace, turning to one of the soldiers. Gary wants you to put a white coat on and take a few rock samples. Oh, Dr. Palmer, you know they only pay us to shoot people, somebody muttered in the group. A ripple of laughter went around the camp. Thank you, said Adams, the team leader. Okay, take up your positions. Let's head out. The group of soldiers trudged off, muttering and laughing amongst themselves. Sanders, forever autonomous, remained a short distance behind Thomas, impassive and aloof.
others tell me that I waste my time on my visits to you, Alexei," said Henschel from his seat at the table in Alex's cell. Henschel's eyes darted around the room once more. Alex had noticed the old man was exhibiting more and more signs of madness. "They say you are too great a risk, and that I should simply kill you." He smiled, trying to gauge Alex's reaction. "And is that what you intend to do?" asked Alex morosely. The visits from Henschel were becoming ever more alarming, and Alex didn't expect to survive much longer. Perhaps this would prove to be the moment. "Oh, I can't do that," Henschel giggled, with a wild light in his eye. "You are much too powerful, Alexei. Don't taunt me. But you are a risk. You must try to fight the enemy within yourself, to come back to us." Every visit, Henschel would urge Alex to battle some evil in himself. But the old man's words were vague, and Alex never felt inclined to pursue those mad ramblings. But now, it seemed he may be in real danger. Alex awoke from his long depression, fueled by a nervous energy. "What is in me?" he asked at last. "Why do you fear me?" "Oh, you know, Alexei, my friend," laughed Henschel. "You know. They are in you, and all around you. I see them. They dance around you like fireflies."
His gaze shifted, and his eyes darted about the room again. His face lit up as he followed something invisible to Alex.
"What is in me?" sighed Alex in exasperation, although he did know the truth in his heart.
The familiar throb behind his eyes sprang up, like a creature awakening in his skull.
"Oh yes, that's it," breathed Henschel excitedly, his eyes settling upon Alex once more. "What is it?" gasped Alex, feeling a tension arise in him. "What are they?" "It is evil," said Henschel, staring straight into Alex's eyes. "They have you and they won't let you go. They feed upon your fear and pain, working to stop our plans of helping the world. They seek to destroy us, Alexei. You must fight them."
The old man's words cut deep into him, and he felt a rising panic, and a sense of sadness engulfed him.
"I have done such terrible things," Alex croaked, his voice breaking as tears came upon him, and he sobbed into his hands. "Such terrible things. You can fight it, Alexei," urged Henschel manically. "Oh, my friend, come back to us."
His voice was deep and soothing. Alex felt the warmth of the old man's words wash over him, calming his heavy sobs. He felt the big man sit down beside him on the bed, a huge reassuring arm around his shoulder.
"Come back to us," he whispered,
and Alex suddenly felt like a son to this kind, beneficial father figure. He ceased his tears and wiped his eyes and nose as best he could. He smiled a little as his mood receded, and looked up into Henschel's kind face. Alex screamed and recoiled from the figure pressed close against him. Henschel's face was distorted into a hideous, bestial parody. The creature's cruel, inhuman eyes burned hatred at him, and as he watched in horror, the monster grinned lazily to reveal twisted, uneven yellow fangs. Its skin was rotten, and small insects and lice burrowed and crawled upon its cheeks. Alex shrieked again and tore himself from the creature's grasp, hurling himself at the door of his cell in a desperate attempt to escape. He slid, sobbing, to the floor as the creature stood and approached him, towering above. Alex curled himself into a ball in the corner of his cell as the door swung inwards with a terrifying screech, and the creature slowly pulled its huge, stinking bulk out of the room. Dimly, Alex caught sight of many writhing tentacles, covered in rough spines and barbs, curl around the edge of the door from the outside. With a mighty force, they slammed it shut, leaving Alex choking and sobbing, alone in the corner of his cell.
You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.